Okay. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Well, good morning here. This is we've changed days as an experiment when it comes to the science of triangles work. I know that has left some of you out of the picture, and some of you are not yet informed, but if you let me know, I certainly can send you the any program that you might miss, or maybe Joe Waltz or Michael Stacy can do that as well. But we can't find a time that is suitable for everybody, obviously, and here in the United States, it's getting quite late, and in South America right now, I suppose it's the dead of night. So it's not really possible to bring everybody in, although some of you from the US, I think, are actually here. I just want to welcome you, Anne, Annette, Barbara, Christopher, Carrie, Marianne, Marissa, Mariut, Martha, Nienke, Winnie, Zenaide, and Veronica. Oh, you did make it. Wow. Okay, good for you. Behind the simple work of triangles is this incredible complex network and web of relations. Now, we cannot possibly grasp all of it, but the Tibetan has given us enough to keep us busy for years as we try to understand the different relationships which are effective on the earth and impact humanity in its various grades and provide for evolution, spiritual evolution, or if wrongly appropriated, retardation. We're just beginners in this, okay? So you'll see a lot of astrological factors operative here, but then we will pre be prepared for the other kinds of studies that will take us into different types of triangles not mentioned in the esoteric astrology book, and we will have a foundation. So just allow yourself to go with the information. We're all attempting to interpret it, and really, we understand that a complete and excellent interpretation that covers all aspects is not yet possible for us, but we will learn, and then behind our regular and practical triangles work, we will have this academic background and understand something of the great network which supports our work with each other. I mean, just to know, for instance, the three great beings on our planet who are called Buddhas of activity, and knowledge of them is scattered throughout the books, beings who were planetary logoi, actually, along the line of intelligence in a previous solar system, are somehow supervising and behind this triangles network is an amazing thought already. So this the triangles work rises, symbolically into the stratosphere. It rises high in consideration of planetary, systemic, and extra systemic happenings. And we're going to, try to learn about that as we go along. Let's just have a little, we'll have a little alignment, and then later, we will have, a short, meditation. So in the silence, we do come together. and wherever we may be geographically, we form and are forming one field of consciousness. And our intention is to absorb some kind of knowledge provided by the Tibetan in what he considers to be his most esoteric or occult book, Esoteric Astrology, because it deals only with energies. And we acknowledge to ourselves that we are triangles workers, and that from a practical point of view, we are attempting to build a triangular network, a network of triangles within the human family, and to convert the square-like relations of non-sacred planets to the triangular relations of sacred planets. So, in our own way, we are contributing to the coming sacredness of the planet and certainly to the uplift of humanity. As a soul-receiving center within the planetary economy. So together we kind of hover on the periphery of Master DK's ashram and attempt to receive the knowledge that he has prepared for us, you know, some 80-something years ago. There's still much to absorb, and new teachings on astrology are coming as well. So, we affirm these facts. Now we turn to our recent reading of last week, just as a segue, we are facing what is called in initiatory language the accolade of fire. And he's told us, you know, at some point, it's not those who are overly eager or those who are neglectful that receive this accolade of fire. There has to be a middle path here of fulfilling the the requirements and not ambition and not neglect. So this is the accolade of fire. We stand ready for it as a human race. And at that final stage, before really progress into the fifth kingdom of nature, humanity stands today. When, as is now the case, the influence of Uranus is added to the other influences. Now remember, the ray being, the ray lord of the seventh ray is different from Uranus, and they have a strong connection, and Uranus transmits that ray, but there are distinctions. But they are combining their forces on our planet at this time. Uranus basically ruling the coming sign of Aquarius, and the seventh ray in its own cycle, accompanying Aquarius for some, well, a couple of figures are given, but let's say 2,500 years at the max. So these two influences are added together, and a major cycle is being entered by the seventh ray, and who knows, a 25,000 year period of Aquarius is on the horizon. It's what's called a great Platonic year, and it consists of 12 precessional cycles, which will be largely ruled by Aquarius for 25,000 years, just as we have ended a Piscean cycle of the same duration. I'm not sure what ray ruled it. I don't think the Tibetan gives that, maybe the sixth ray, I'm not sure. But always in a ray cycle, there will be an accompanying ray to even the greater period. At least that's a hypothesis. We certainly know it is the case with respect to the smaller precessional cycles. So then there will be present the energy needed to precipitate the crisis of initiation. Now think about it. The first initiation is ruled by what ray? The seventh ray, right? If you want to get more on that, you go to the rays and the initiations, page 340, and you'll see the different rays and combinations of rays that rule the different initiations. As a matter of fact, why not do that? I just show you what I mean. And you will see the pattern. Look. So the seventh ray rules the first initiation. The sixth ray rules the second, the fifth ray, the third, and the fourth ray, the fourth. And you would think we would just keep going to the third ray, which is in some senses correct, but we switch to the first ray under the rulership of Pluto. It's a major first ray planet. And then come some of the rays of aspect, the great decision by Saturn and the third ray, and the resurrection initiation that the Christ is passing through by the great second ray, which relates him to the solar logos. And there are triangles here of different kinds of activities connected with the particular initiation. And then finally, when we're dealing with the final two initiations, there are combinations of rays of attribute and rays of aspect. So that's a very esoteric chart, and one we want to remember, but it's Uranus that is so important now because it's bringing in the seventh ray, and it rules, we're told on page 517, it for both disciples and more ordinary non-aspiring humanity, it still rules the sacral center. And the objective in the first initiation is the transference of the energy of the sacral center to the throat. So I think we can understand how important is the seventh ray in this whole initiatory process, because eventually the seventh ray is going to rule the throat center of the initiate and not just the third ray. And so Uranus will be involved there as well. So we have what it takes present for humanity to take the first initiation. And then, maybe we can study the individual horoscope to see where a person stands. But it's always more important to estimate where a person stands than look into a horoscope and try to guess from the horoscope where the person stands. It's just, I don't think it's possible, and it's against the method that Master DK gives. Somewhere in the Scorpio chapter, around page 223 or 222, somewhere in there, study the person first, and then you can go to the horoscope more intelligently, understanding the rays and so forth. Now, we enter into the next section. It must not be forgotten that Leo, the most human of all the signs, he has said, and so much involved in individualization in the old days, creating a center in the mass consciousness, a reference center that we consider to be, or the individual considers to be himself, whereas he didn't have that center as animal man per se. It must not be forgotten that Leo marks the height of achievement for the human soul. It's the beginning and, in a way, the end, and is very much connected with mastership. And there is a statement in the rules that says they are no longer men as are the masters. Now, he's talking about the Chohans, who at the sixth initiation transcend the strictly human stage. But at the fifth initiation, it is the height of the human soul, and at that point, the human soul will be considered to be the spiritual triad and not consciousness encapsulated in the causal body, which has been by that time destroyed. So the height of achievement for the human soul, it's the fifth sign, and we talk about the fifth initiation. And this is today stimulated by the Shambhala force now flowing into the center of humanity. It's interesting. He tells us many initiates, many actually, of the fifth degree will be needed in the rather immediate future. And we can see how Shambhala and Leo can stimulate the process of becoming a master. So soul culture is stimulated by Shambhala, and of course, spirit culture as well. This inflow will continue its critical work until, in the Aquarian age, so rapidly coming into expression, maybe even from the early 17th century, we might say, when Francis Bacon was active with his methods and experiments. This inflow will continue its critical work until in the Aquarian age, so rapidly coming into expression, and let's say confirmed by the year 2117, when Venus moves again across the face of the sun, the one-pointed attitude of the Leo person, or shall I call it the self-centeredness, well, at some stages it is that, becomes the expanded consciousness and the decentralized attitude of the Aquarian man. Now, lest we think that one sign is better than another, it is not so, because he tells us that heights of service are reached by those whose major energies are Leo and or Aquarius. And Gemini always completes a triangle between the majority of opposing signs. So there are triangles to be considered. You might say Aries, Libra, Gemini, Taurus, Scorpio, Gemini, And then when it comes to Gemini and Sagittarius, Pisces is the mediating point making the triangle. Cancer, Capricorn, Gemini, Leo, Aquarius, Gemini, Virgo, Pisces, Gemini. So Gemini serving the function in that triangle of relating the opposites and really making them into one energy eventually. Eventually, all the 12 energies synthesize and merge in the very center of the cross and rise to the heights to create the possibility of the pyramid and of initiation. So anyway, in the Aquarian age, the power of the planet Venus becomes dominant, a dominant factor in the last decanate. The last, let us say, 720 years, by one method of reckoning the years. Now, this I've already told you when we were studying that sign. You know, it is the finally the planet of brotherly love, and that is the era that is ruled by Libra, which is one of the signs, I believe, in the horoscope of the Christ as the Prince of Peace, you know, Libra, Venus, and so forth. Matter of fact, you know, we have a non-sacred planet here, and the monads that have come to it, I believe, are monads that have an origin on other planets. Most of them sacred, but some from Mars, I think. So anyway, it's quite probable that the Christ has a great relation to Venus, which itself in our solar system has a great relation to Sirius. So there's the triangle there of Sirius, Venus, and the Earth, and it is giving us our tendency towards initiation and the culture of the Christ consciousness and the soul. So anyway, Venus is really important, and there is a triangle. When we look at Aquarius, it goes backwards, shall we say, Venus, Mercury, Saturn. Or if we're a disciple, it goes Saturn, Mercury, Venus. Those are the rulers of the decanates. You know, you can take note of these things, and they may simply seem at first like items of knowledge. But when you begin to study your circumstances and the wider circumstances around you, you will see the influences of these signs expressing themselves. And we have to become sensitive to the subtler energies of a planetary, systemic, and cosmic nature, and we will become sensitive to them, and then we will know how to wield them in group form, pretty much, at the right time. Eventually, all knowledge will be ours, at least in terms of this globe and chain, upon the third subplane of the atmic plane. You know, this is it here, and on this level here, all knowledge is a power which is achieved, and maybe one of the most important things about that achievement is the knowledge of cycles, which allows us to work intelligently with the divine plan. Because so much of the plan has to do with releasing aspects of purpose at the right time and in the right intensity. And we don't know much about that yet. DK has given us a few items regarding the cycles of the new group of world servers, some 7-year cycles, some 3-year cycles, and we know something about crisis, tension, and emergence. But again, we are beginners in this, and we just have to accept that that is the case. So upon the reversed wheel, progressing in our bodies and our energy systems forward through the signs, upon the reversed wheel in the case of the spiritual oriented man and disciple, it is the first decanate under whose influence he comes, which is governed by Venus, and this should be remembered. Well, that is somewhat true. How can I put this? The mankind in general enters Aquarius via Saturn, and there's an overarching difficulty to the adjustments which are required during the first 700 years or so. Ordinary, non-aspiring, personality-oriented people will enter via Venus and progress from Venus to Mercury to the difficulties which will be salutary under Saturn, salutary for them. The disciple will progress, entering Aquarius under the Saturn part of the triangle, then proceed to Mercury, and then proceed to Venus. So, this seems to be an unusual statement which is at odds with some things he has said elsewhere, so we have to seek to clarify this point. Now, obviously, one thing is true. Venus is the planet of the soul. It is the planet of the solar angel. And under the disciplines of Saturn, soul culture under Venus will be undertaken. So disciples will find their opportunity by disciplining themselves in the beginning part of the Aquarian age to have a much fuller expression of Venus as the soul. We can somewhat solve the enigma of this statement, because elsewhere he tells us the first planet to be encountered by the spiritually minded in Aquarius is Saturn. So, you know, certainly the Tibetan provokes our thought. Venus was the planet, we are told, which was responsible for the appearance of the individualized consciousness in man. In other words, the solar angels responding to the vibration of Venus and perhaps coming from Sirius to the Sun, to Venus, and thence to Earth, implanted the spark of mind in some of the animal man of the time. And Venus was officiating over that, guiding the solar angels. Then there were others for whom the spark of mind, which had been growing up in the latter days of animal development, was fanned to increasing intensity by the solar angels. It was another method of individualization, which was not implantation of the presence of the solar angel itself. But maybe later, you know, the solar angel took on some of these types of human beings, because when you look at the animal man of that period of individualization, they were not all equal in their development. And the least of the animal men of that period, the solar angels really did nothing. And they were left to continue their evolution according to the natural method without the divine intervention of the solar angels. And in the next round, the fifth, they will have their opportunity, it is said. But, you know, Venus is so much more than the kind of popular view of it as representing the female, while Mars represents the male, and, you know, it's all about romantic love and all that kind of thing. And it's much more than that. It's all about a great planet, which is the twin sister, in a way, of the Earth, Venus being now well, what can you call it, a female incarnation, and Mars in a masculine Earth in a masculine incarnation at this time, and Venus sets the standard for what Earth should be. So, you know, there is a triangle here that we have to think about. It is Venus, Earth, and Mars, with Mars being the lowest of the three. Mars, a non-sacred planet, Earth sacred inwardly, and Venus entirely sacred. So in a way, if you think about it, the humanity on Earth is torn between the material tendencies of non-sacred Mars, which are violent and divisive, and the harmonious, loving tendencies of Venus. And this is why, you know, it's so important that Libra is coming into power in the planetary horoscope, activating the Venus part of this triangle and giving a real stimulation to soul culture. So always remember this triangle of Venus, Earth, and Mars, and they are, I wish I had a way to do it, but Venus is the circle above the cross, Earth is the cross within the circle, and Mars is the cross above the circle. So you can interpret that in terms of its material or spiritual implications. Okay, so Venus, let's see. Venus was the planet, we are told, which was responsible for the appearance of the individual consciousness in man. It's interesting, the symbol is like a mirror. And there is something called reflexive consciousness connected with Venus, and it puts the eye, the outward exteriorizing eye of the human being, it reflects it back upon itself, and the center which is being created within that human being is acknowledged, and the sense of I-ness comes into the consciousness under the inducement towards reflexive consciousness, which Venus provides. When you're looking into the looking glass, you see yourself. And so, of course, this is a planet too, which can be responsible for some degree of self-admiration and egoism and all that in later days, and that part of it has to be overcome. You know, it's very interesting. All of these planets are tremendously complex. They are gods, after all. They are great beings, and we little human beings, we just know a little bit about them, basically. Okay, but maybe enough to know that if we want to develop soul culture in our process, we've got to head for Venus and away from Mars. And it's like saying wars must come to an end and peace must supervene. And we're promised, you know, at least symbolically, the era of peace for 1,000 years, whatever those figures really mean. But that will occur in the Aquarian Age. And you wonder whether it will be later in the Aquarian Age when Libra and Venus rule. I'm not sure, but certainly not in the very beginning, and yet there will be enough peace for the Christ to reappear and become again the world teacher in a very visible way and for a very long time when compared to his 3 years of active appearance taking over the body of Jesus at the baptism. So in the Aquarian Age, you know, back in those days, Venus was really important. It's got a fifth-ray quality, so it relates to the birth of mind or the coming into prominence of the mind. And Lemuria had a lot of the fifth-ray connected with it, as well as the seventh-ray for the kind of biological rhythms which early man had to follow, and of course the third ray of materiality. 7, 3, 5, and 7 were active in those days for individualization. In the Aquarian age, Venus will again have an analogous influence. Now, a new kingdom was born in those days, and Venus was active. Another kingdom is being born now. So it's going to bring in entry into the fifth kingdom. Okay. Only this is the difference, that the emergence into manifestation of an increased individualism and self-conscious realization, a Leo factor, will be subordinate to the appearance of the first stages of an expanded consciousness throughout all mankind. There's no question that when Venus is compared to the Earth, its consciousness is much elevated. Earth should be there, but it is not due to various factors. So here comes the consciousness of group responsibility. It's a combination of Venus and Saturn, both of which are rulers of the decanates in Aquarius, and also in the sign of initiation, Capricorn. So this is interesting. He talks about this maybe only here. What will be emerging will be expressed as a form of group individualism. See, when you begin to see yourself within the environment, which the animal cannot do, individualism is born, and since the fifth ray rules the law of cleavage, there is a perceived cleavage between what you now perceive as yourself and what you perceive as the environment. All this under the Venusian fifth ray. And that leads to the cultivation, eventually, of personality, and we call it individualism. Well, in the future, in the group age Aquarius, groups will be known for their particular responsibility, their quality of energies, zodiacal and in terms of the rays, and they will cultivate themselves, but always in cooperation with the other groups. Now, maybe we're already beginning to see that happening in a faint way in our discipleship groups now. So, going on a little bit, excuse me. Therefore, behind all these events, the dim outline of a lesser triangle of energy can be seen. And this is the blend of the energy of three planets, you know, preparing our way for the Aquarian age, the age of group consciousness. And our spirituality will be greatly enhanced by these particular planets. Under Venus, we have the cultivation of the soul and the reflection of the Sirian influence bringing initiation. Under Uranus, we have that great transformation. It rules the first initiation with the seventh ray prominent at that initiation. And it's all taking place within the substance of our vehicles and upon the earth. And these two sacred planets are acting upon the earth, and the sacred aspects of ourselves are acting upon the non-sacred elemental aspects of our energy system. So this is an important triangle in terms of what is potential in man at this time. It's a planetary triangle. And, you know, we have mythology involving these three. The birth of Venus is here, and, well, it's so interesting. Uranus is the only second ray monad there is really Venus, and the other two, Uranus and Earth, have the first ray monad. So let's just say that the opportunity for man to be transformed or transmuted into the fifth kingdom of nature is resting to no small degree with this particular triangle. So, you know, basically what you do, you know, is you make a list of the triangles and their sort of basic meaning. And then you can get into the analysis of what each one of these points of the triangle may offer. But we have to become more and more like Venus. And while upholding Saturn, we have to go through the great transformation that Uranus offers. And all of this within the Earth and within our Earth, so to speak. Now, so the combination DK gives us the, the personality ray of the Earth, the third ray, the soul ray of Uranus, the seventh, and the soul ray of Venus, the fifth, and the action of 7 and 5, very related to Master R, and actually both 7 and 5 related much to Uranus, interestingly, because Uranus, you know, rules all manner of electricity, and the fifth ray has a particular connection with electrical language and electrical phenomena. So the 7 and 5 together help to raise the ray of the Earth to the second ray and help to raise the focus of a human being upon his or her own personality up to the level of the soul, which is generically ruled by the second ray. So an important triangle, and just, you know, make note of it and, you know, ponder on it. I mean, we could have triangle meditations of an academic kind where we would try ponder on the value and the expressive radiation of particular triangles, and it would do something to the mind. It would help us think more unitively and ultimately more synthetically, and we need that kind of thinking. Okay, and notice here that two of the rulers of Libra are present, Venus, Uranus, and not so much, not Capricorn, it would be Venus, Saturn. So two of the three rulers of Libra are present in this triangle. Now, I don't know, you know, I know this is a lot of material. He's writing this at the time of the lead up to the Second World War, and he's making it topical and applying it to what is occurring. It can be noted how this combination of energies, when playing upon Germany's soul ray of harmony through conflict, all of the Axis powers had that fourth ray, and her first ray personality on the ray of power, and the destroyer responsive to Shambhala is responsible for much of the present conflict, for the reason that the reaction of that country under the influence of its present rulers has been in terms of the material aspect and not of the spiritual. So we can ponder on that, because it's a bit of an intricate statement. Now, I think we may have gone far enough in this reading so that we can take up something new. It's all part of the same subject. And eventually, not much further, we'll be getting into... What are we getting into here? I guess there is quite a bit to deal with. Here it is, the triangles and the centers. Well, that may be one or two programs away. But, you know, we have to try to digest this material in small bites. Otherwise, we will get mental indigestion, you know? So I'm just going to say that this is as far as we'll go for right now. We've been dealing with Leo, Aquarius, Venus, Uranus. We've been dealing with the solar angel. We've been dealing with the transference of energy from the sacral center to the throat center. We've been dealing with the process of individualization and its higher correspondence now, the entry into the fifth kingdom of nature. We've been dealing with the formation of groups and the setting aside of groups for specific purposes. So, quite a few subjects of an academic kind. Now, this is the 6th of February, and I think we started at 4:47, and have not made a lot of page progress, but that's okay. 4:49, I believe it is. He's just making reference to 4:35, saying go back there and you'll see something important. So just a couple of pages, but slowly, slowly we absorb. So this is the end of number 29, and we'll have the beginning of 30. And it looks like that will occur on the 13th, Wednesday, and it will be in the evening schedule. So this is the 13th, and from 4:49, there we go, and we'll say the evening schedule. And okay, there we are. All right, friends, maybe you've taken some notes. Maybe some things have been interesting. DK tells us, look, there are several things to check out in the horoscope of the disciple, and the position of Venus, representing the soul and the influence of the solar angel, is one of the important points to focus on. It will tell you something about which chakras may be involved and what kind of access one has to the downpouring energy of the solar angel and maybe how it can best be accessed. He also tells us that there are certain fixed stars, like they call them fixed because they don't seem to move much, but of course they do move. Alcyone in the Pleiades and Sirius and maybe Regulus. There are some royal stars there that need to be considered. The stars in the Big Dipper, Dubhe and Merak and other stars, when they make important contacts in the horoscope and they are important stars in discipleship, then one has to pay attention to them. So this will involve a different kind of reading of the horoscope than the traditional reading, which is mostly concerned with how will my personality fare in this world, and will I be successful or not, happy or not, and all the rest of it. And the kind of readings that we want to do have to do with what's the best way to expand consciousness, expand and deepen consciousness. The whole theme on this planet, coming up anyway, and in this solar system, certainly, a second ray solar system, is the expansion of consciousness. Now, intelligence and will go along with that, of course, but the main theme is sensitivity. It's largely an astral Devic solar system. It has, I don't know, what is the story? 200, it has 200 Billion, is that it? 200 billion deva and human units, 140 billion deva units, and 60 billion human units, and we're talking about those that are self-conscious, not all the little elementals and devas that have not yet achieved that state. And in the next solar system, it's amazing, there will be 300 units, and they will be of a different nature. So 100 billion in the first solar system, 200 in the second, 300 in the third, totaling 600 billion, and in the sixth solar system. That will be the accumulated result. So many will have been trained in this series of solar systems, and then there will be, in some mysterious way, a seventh composite solar system consisting of all the others that have gone before. But that's another matter, and of course it's a triangle again, isn't it? The first solar system, the second solar system, the third solar system, and the point in the middle, which is their synthesis. So always be on the lookout for triangles and how they might function. Always there are three aspects of divinity: will, love, wisdom, and intelligence, or will, love, and light. And that is a key for us when we're looking for triangles, because they all seem to function according to those three qualities of divinity. And who is in the center of the triangle? Well, it depends, I think, where the triangle is. Okay, so maybe that's enough of that. I wonder if I can make this small enough to see it under the eye, Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see. Okay, I can't do anything about the picture. It is what it is. Okay. Now, friends, I know that many of you are hesitant to get into this technical side of things, but maybe some thought came up for you, and if so, this would be the time to express it. And so it could lead anywhere. We don't know. And of course, we're really dealing with the general study of occultism. That is our work, the general study of occultism. And if we take off from the subject a little bit, it's okay, because everything is related to everything else within the field of our planet and solar system, and actually universe, and there's no isolated factor. You can always get to any factor in the universe from any other factor. So what's on your mind? Anything? Anything that you'd like to? Yeah, wait a second. There's a kind of a, do I see Michael? A question mark. There's Suzanne, and okay. Right. Here's Suzanne saying, I'm reminded of the books Dweller on Two Planets and An Earth Dweller Returns by a certain mysterious Phylos. Interesting. Which is a fascinating fictional account of interplay twixt inhabitants of both Earth and Venus on an esoteric level. That is interesting. And I saw one of those kind of colorful, popular pamphlet books published in India, the title was "Easy Travel to Other Planets." And I thought to myself, well, goodness, we've got the astral plane really working here, because there is no easy travel to other planets, and one has to be at least a master, a Chohan, or a still higher initiate to even think that it might be possible. The rest is in the realm of the imagination. But to take in the energy of other planets through their representatives in Shambhala on our planet, this is possible, because all planets in our solar system are represented within our own planet. And even the seven ray lords, what are they but reflections of the seven sacred planets? And what are the seven sacred planets in our solar system but reflections of the seven solar systems of which ours is one? And we can probably trace that even further to reflections that are found within the Great Bear, and on and on. So the greater is always reflected in the lesser, and we do have access to the energies, even though there is no easy travel to other planets. So, and I want to say that, Suzanne, you know, that what the Tibetan says may remind us of certain things we've encountered before. And that's good, because in that reminding comes a thread of linkage, which is a way to start building the unity of perception with regard to all of these relations. I mean, the relations are unified. It's just that we don't see it. And when we get that flash, that Mercurian flash that takes us to another place, maybe through memory, we are actually starting to build our appreciation of the unity. So thank you for that thought, and could be interesting. You know, it's fictional, but oftentimes fiction reveals a lot. Okay, are there other thoughts that come to your mind when dealing with Venus, with Uranus? I mean, you know, all of us are really, there's none of us that is not dealing with Venus, because Venus really is the planet of the solar angels. It's the planet of the soul. It is the planet of higher mind. Of course, its fifth ray can be related also to lower mind, but it is the planet of higher mind, and all of us are attempting to learn how to focus consciousness on the higher levels of the mental plane. And that would indicate for us some degree of success in meditation, says the Tibetan. In Letters on Occult Meditation, people fail, he says, in meditation because they cannot focus their consciousness on the higher mental plane, and that is the realm of Venus. So meditation upon Venus in one's own chart and its indications, always different and interesting indications, are of value. The meditation is of value, and the different meditations are of value to the progressing, developing disciple. Okay, any further thoughts? I don't want, you know, I know I talk forever here, but I want to see. Yes.
I am not seeing any hands raised or questions posed, but you may want to address this period of opportunity with the seventh ray in the Aquarian age, and what is the appearances of the outer world seems to suggest that humanity is going through the burning ground.
Well, I think, you know, you're saying it right there, Michael. We are in that transition period, and the seventh ray is well nigh with us in a rather pure form. Now, right now, and DK deals with it in The Destiny of the Nations, there's been a battle going on between the outgoing sixth ray and the transformational seventh ray, which is reflecting in more concrete form the will of God, the planetary logos. We look at our political and religious and economic spheres, and maybe the other spheres too, and we find that there are reactionary responses that want to go back to the safeties, so to speak, of the good old days. And we look at the progressives who are agitating and disturbing and disturbing the status quo. And that is, of course, the right direction. But because of the fourth ray, he says, no dangerous gap or break need exist between the true values cultured in the old regime and the coming values. So the fourth ray is harmonizes the sixth and seventh ray, and by the time another few years pass, the fourth ray will begin to be with us. And at one point he tells us, well, there's no real cause for anxiety. Sometimes he says, you better have a lot of anxiety because you could blow the whole thing. And other times he says, no real cause for anxiety. The fourth ray is coming and Libra is coming. All of us are going to have to learn to be subsidiary in our ray structure to the seventh ray. Now, he says that most monads will get along just fine with the seventh ray monad, but not those upon the sixth ray monad. Now, you know, sometimes you think, well, there's only three monadic types, but it's not really so. If you study the teaching carefully, you will see that there are seven monadic types, and the three final monadic types are 1, 2, and 3, but before that you can be on any number of seven. So there are six ray monads, and they will have a tough time under the regime of the seventh ray, because, you know, they work by impulse and not by plan. They work spontaneously and often thoughtlessly and not by rhythm. So they're going to have a lot to learn, and they will be with us to a certain extent. I mean, many six-ray souls are going out of incarnation, but you cannot imagine a humanity without six-ray personalities. It is a ray that is much needed. So the opportunity for us to come in line with the will of God and to do things in such a manner that the outer plane reflects the order of the inner plane is really now with us. And the chaos that has been produced on the outer level by so many years of sixth ray, which, it's given us the idealism, of course, and it's raised us beyond our normal self and given us the ability to sacrifice. It's done many good things, but it has failed to pay attention to the welfare of the outer plane. And DK, develops that idea. And the sixth ray, the seventh ray coming in will really give us the opportunity to finally, and in a well-manifested manner, bring heaven to earth, whatever we consider heaven to be. Now, heaven will be, our best thoughts, our highest directives, the aspects of the divine plan that we can understand, and they will appear. Now, how do we prepare ourselves for this opportunity? Well, we certainly study and meditate according to what Master DK has given us, and we become very informed about the nature of energy. That's the thing about his teaching. He's given us so many energies which are responsible for what happens. And we can either study these energies and their interplay, and that's what we're doing here, or we can simply, ignore all that and speak in more general terms. I would say that, he's a very mental master in a certain respect, and he certainly does stimulate the concrete mind, the son of mind, the abstract mind, and the transcendental mind of man. Now, if we want that kind of stimulation, we're studying with the right teacher. And he is the bridging teacher. And more treatises are coming. And in maybe it'll take about 100 years to absorb all that he's going to give. And by that time, we will really be ready for the opportunity of a fully established Aquarianism. We still have the pulls and counterpulls going on between the remainder, between those two energies in the remainder of this century. And it could get intense, you know, because there's always some kind of fearful response when an energy is going out and people are identified with the disappearance of that energy. They get frightened. And then frightened people do things that are not good for them or good for the whole. So the next life will probably be more intense than this one in terms of establishing the ageless wisdom by the end of the century. Okay, so that's about a little bit about our opportunities as they lie ahead. We'll become more creative, more mental, more aligned with the plan, and less personal, more impersonally aligned with the divine plan. A great opportunity. Right. Okay, Michael, did that cover a little bit of what you were talking about?
And the first initiation for humanity as a whole.
Yeah, that, and you know, look, when that happens, it will indicate that the Christ has reappeared. So we cannot think that that's going to happen immediately, because so many things have to happen in hierarchy first. You know, go to page 699 or page 530 in Externalization of the Hierarchy, and you will see all the things that have to be done with initiates and masters in the planetary centers before the Christ can reappear. But the two events are contemporaneous. The first initiation of humanity and the reappearance of the Christ. And when the Christ reappears, it will signal that humanity in the brackets that could take that initiation have taken that initiation. And meanwhile, you know, we can really help people be aware of that. Maybe especially people who are outgrowing their particular type of religion of the moment and need to see a greater vision and be presented with a greater opportunity. I'm sure we all have plenty of opportunity to meet people like that who, whether they know it or not, are deeply aspiring towards a deeper understanding that the present presentation of religion to which they are adhering cannot give. I know they, you know, personally, they always come into my sphere, and I'm really happy to talk to them. It may cause a little bit of discomfort, you know, as the old manas reacts to it. But on the other hand, it usually opens the door to something that is really appreciated. And I think many of us have this opportunity. And if it's not to people who are, let us say, adhering to a certain religion, it's people with any worldview at all, which is based upon personality. And certainly, we all encounter such people. I mean, the great majority of human beings is presently that way. So we have a what's called a spiritual propaganda effort along the second-ray line of education. And it takes so much skill to know what to say and when to say it to give an enhanced vision and help to open the door. But it's a real requirement. It's part of spreading the ageless wisdom so that by the end of the century, according to Blavatsky, occultism or the ageless wisdom will have won the day. And it's only, you know, 80 years left. So it's not a lot of time. but it has to be done. And I'm sure there will be certain events and discoveries that will help this take place. Okay, anything, friends? Otherwise, we get on to just a little concluding meditation of tonight. It'll be a broadcast, and I'll be offering that 2 years out of town right now, and it'll be on the regular triangles meditation. So that'll be at 6 o'clock p.m. GMT. Then the next day, evening schedule, Reappearance of the Christ, and the next day evening schedule, it will be the glamour meditation. And then, you know, as we have been doing. Okay, just hang in there. Don't get discouraged. Okay. Yes, Michael?
Yeah, I see no more hands or questions raised.
Do you see any etheric hands, perhaps? You know,
always.
They're a bit hard, a little harder to see, you know, but sometimes, like I would raise my hand if I dared to raise my hand kind of thing, you know?
It seems as though we're ready to go into the triangles meditation then.
Right. Well, a little bit of it. You know, I'm not going to overdo it because it's much fuller. It's much fuller tonight. By the way, I've been making programs for you. You know, they're rather lengthy. A couple of five-hour programs have been produced over the last couple of days. And they are all from externalization of the hierarchy and from an essay that was written right on the eve of the precipitation of the Second World War, or it had just precipitated. It was written in September of 1939, and that's when Germany attacked Poland. But in case you think you would become lost in all kinds of commentary about the forces that are on the ground and the who's winning the war and this and that, it's not. It's a huge analysis of the antecedents of the war in Atlantean times and how they have transferred their condition to the present time, the roots of the war in Atlantean times. So you may find it of interest. In this section too, he gives quite a description of the wonderful Atlantean civilization with accomplishments that are far beyond what we had managed to accomplish. So I think pretty soon BL or Joe will be getting that up on Makara. I know they're lengthy, but I always say to people, look, don't worry about it. Just stop where you want to stop. And then when you pick it up again and listen again, just go to the time which is indicated where you stopped, and you'll just be able to resume. It's very easy, and your video playing program will allow you to do that. It's only the download might take a little bit of time, but once you have it, you'll be able to work with it. I'm just using this opportunity to produce as many programs as I can. I have a little break, and soon the conference comes and all of that. And by the way, do think about the conference this year. It's a Third Ray conference, and it has to do with the Forerunners of the Light. That's one of the names of the Third Ray. Forerunners of the Light, illuminating and manifesting the divine plan. And, you know, the emphasis upon the future and also upon history, and we trust that the new PIP will now be ready, personal identity profile for Ray analysis and so forth, and economics and philosophy and history and all those nice Third Ray things. Don't shy away from the Third Ray or the Sixth Ray, because there's just so much to learn. So there in Chandler, Arizona, if you want to put in an appearance, that'd be fantastic. And we have an old town Chandler just adjacent to the hotel where the conference is being held. And that old town was established in 1912, which is the very year that Arizona came into the Union and was made a state. So there's a lot of history there, and actually a beautiful place, and we all have a good time and learn a lot. So think about it. If you are interested, it's still quite reasonable, just the way the Dobson was. I know it's never entirely reasonable to travel from other countries to the United States, but well, we can always hope for a currency crash or something like that. The way things are going, you never know. The United States might be the easiest place to visit before long. Okay. Now, let's go on. Now, what was I doing? That's a good question. I'm going into pictures, and here's something about triangles, and maybe I can, I've got all these PowerPoints. I hope nobody takes my computer ever. I'll have to back it up somewhere. I usually do this ahead of time, but, you know, today I just didn't. And, okay, a little bit. So again, we'll come together in the silence. And you can always feel the effect of that. It's quite powerful. And Master DK gives us some instructions how to start the day. Prior to your group meditation, I mean, if you're in the Moria Federation, there are these group meditations. But anyway, prior to meditation, rest quietly back in your chair or bed, and closing your eyes, link up with your soul and with me, your friend, Master DK. And a triangle of light will be created. You will visualize it between your soul, your head center, and Master DK. And we hold the triangle firmly in our consciousness. We can do that now, and this is sort of a representation of what that looks like. A solid triangle, golden orange light. And try to feel the quality now of the presence of the Master and the presence of the solar angelic energy, and all reaching your thousand-petaled lotus on the top of your head. These are real energies and real sources, and we should begin to feel the presence of them and the inflow from them. Our purpose is to bring the triangle of the soul into the square. It's kind of the symbol of the Masonic apron that you've seen. It looks like the letter M. the triangle into the square, and that means soul infusion. And think for a moment of the of your own little network of triangles, even if it's one, related to the global network, but of course our studies show that it doesn't stop there and is existing throughout the solar system, especially on the sacred planets, whose etheric network is triangular, and the sun's etheric network is a series of interlocked circles. And onward and out into the cosmos, all kinds of triangular relationships exist. So just kind of sit with that idea for a moment. And thus are things linked together in a way that brings the spiritual energy into the material energy. Until really one day, at least the etheric body of the earth that we can affect is really triangular in its structure. And whatever we do privately in our own little networks is an integral part of the triangularization going on within humanity and within the etheric body of the planet. Let's try to realize that. And we also know that the root of the triangle's work on our planet has to do with the three Buddhas of activity. The archetypal triangle for our globe and other aspects of them for our chain and still others for the scheme. The doctrine of emanation is necessary to understand. But here are the three Buddhas, and the triangle network seems to rise toward them, and they can affect it. Great beings who were planetary logoi, imagine. So imagine for a moment the relationship between the three Buddhas and the network. So there is supervision, and we are building something that can be charged with vital energy as needed and in emergencies. The link is our own network to the planetary network to the three Buddhas, as here depicted. And the sense of the integration of all this will grow in our consciousness. And I think what we'll do is simply, we will close our meditation with the sounding of the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And we use that invocation to charge our little network and the big network and the network in our solar system and on the sacred planets, and the great invocation is used. Thank you, everybody, and that's as far as I'll go right now. Tonight at 6 o'clock we'll have a broadcast at the usual live link. Live link, not this one, but it won't be a webinar, it'll be a broadcast, and we'll use the music and so forth, and expand the meditation, and I want to thank you for being here with us today, and, you know, gradually these webinars are all available, and when we do them on as broadcast from YouTube, they do appear on YouTube, and we also have gradually our own programs on YouTube, as well as appearing on makara.us. So thank you very much for your participation. There's a lot to learn, isn't there? So just hold the attitude that, in fact, we can learn it, and we will learn it, no matter how daunting it may seem. And at times, I read things and I say, oh, what does that mean? So it is daunting, but we will learn. Okay. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you a little later. Well, you know, on my today anyway. And I don't know whether it's tomorrow or whatever it is for you, but if you want to be there, you're most welcome. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.